Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a very exciting founder that is joining us. You know, it's a founder that has done it multiple times, you know, a founder that really understands what it means to scale and to build something from nothing, and then also to get it all the way to an exit. We're going to be talking about all of that good stuff, you know, from the first round, you know, experience that he had to going through, you know, through the motions of going through several acquisitions for his previous companies. And right now he's on a rocket ship. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Arjun Pillai. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Alejandro, for having me. Excited to get this going.
So originally born in Kerala, there in India. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, I'm originally from Kerala, India. I grew up in kind of a village. It was a pretty agricultural place. I mean, my childhood was a lot of games. You know, I played a lot of cricket, which is normal in India. For people who are unaware of the game cricket. Yeah, a lot of cricket, a little bit of studies. I was decent at studies. Nothing big happened, right? I come from a middle-class Indian family. I have an elder brother and me, two people in the family, two kids in the family. Then grew up without, you know, when I look back, the only thing that I have learned in that process is, you know, how to be frugal, how to be another, how a middle-class family person would grow up in India. That's exactly how I grew up. So the memory lane is a bunch of happy memories of being in the family.
So I guess where does the whole idea, I mean, the whole idea of becoming an engineer, where does that come from? Where does the love from problem solving, you know, come from?
Yeah, in India, we have this joke that goes around that everybody becomes an engineer and then they figure out what to do with their life. In India, everybody wants to become an engineer or a doctor. In my case, what happened is when I was studying in my 8th, 9th, and 10th standard, I went to what you call as a technical school. It just meant that on top of all the usual subjects that we were learning, we also had electronics and computer science as to additional and electrical engineering, I guess. So three different subjects that usually you don't learn during your school time. I grew very, very passionate about generally. I have always been excited about physics. And then when I saw electronics, I saw electrical, I grew very attached to electronics. So around that 8, 9, 10 time, I started becoming, hey, I want to be an engineer because that's what I love. So there was a little bit of that. And then on top of that, my brother was an engineer. So there was somebody in the family itself who just became an engineer. So I could look up to and say, oh, okay, you know what? Being an engineer is a good potential career choice. And yeah, that's how we decided to become an engineer. And then, you know, thankfully the ranks and stuff came together. So I ended up joining a college not too far from my home. It was like, you know, in 8 miles away from my home. So that also worked out.
So then tell us about, you know, really becoming an entrepreneur, because you were there for a couple of years, but then, you know, eventually you decided to branch out into entrepreneurship, but you did it in a very interesting way, you know, in a way which you were just like testing stuff until, you know, one thing, you know, came together, which ended up being Profoundis, but it was not the first try. So walk us through that.
Yeah. So I started my first company when I was 23. At that age, right, what I call is you are young and stupid. So you don't necessarily know what you are getting into, and you don't have the kind of family and kids to take care of. And financial freedom is kind of there because you just came out. So you don't have mortgages, and thankfully, I didn't have student loans and things like that. So it was fairly easy for me to make a plunge into doing something of my own. During my engineering time and post that, I always wanted to do something of my own. Didn't really know what that meant back in the day. Then I was with Infosys. It is an IT services organization for about 1.5 years. During that time, three of my batchmates back in college and I, we kind of planned, hey, let's do a company. And that's how the idea of a company came together. And in 2012, I resigned and started this company. To your point, the first company was a lot of ups and downs. We built like 4 products in the first 2 years. All of them successfully failed. We would build one company or one product every 6 months. It was all under the same company, the legal entity. We were also bootstrapped because that's all we knew back in the day. We didn't know that there was something called as investors. we didn't know that they could put money into the company. So the only way we knew was to bootstrap the company, which was out by like taking projects, outsource projects, and then doing it, taking that money, and then, you know, trying to build a product out of it. Since we were also super young, we didn't need a lot of money to live. So my salary for about, I think, 2.5-3 years in the first 3 years of the journey as an entrepreneur was $200 a month. Again, $200 in India goes a little bit further than $200 here in the US, but it still was a little lower for even India. But we were happy, you know, it was almost like an extension of men's hostel for us. So it was fun. We didn't think of it as a failing, right? We just thought, okay, next one, next one, next one. And the fifth product became a sales intelligence tool for listeners who are aware of this company called Clearbit or ZoomInfo. It was kind of like those two companies, but ours was before Clearbit. This was 2013. So that's how we ended up in that product, and that product kind of became successful.
So at what point do you guys realize, hey, I think that out of all the ones that we've tested, this one, you know, really makes sense to go at it with?
Yeah, it was interesting. That product launched, it was accidentally launched. The story goes like we were sitting inside our apartment. Everybody lived in the same apartment because we didn't have money. So everyone was sharing. 8:35 p.m., we saw that the traffic on our website was going up. And the website was in such a really bad, atrocious state. Nobody would understand what we were doing by looking at the website. Then what we saw from Google Analytics is that people are coming from this website called as Product Hunt. So what happened behind is there is an investor called Dave Ambrose in Silicon Valley. I have never met the person. He somehow stumbled onto our website. And on the website, there was a slider between $2 to $30. Basically, my team asked me, how should we price this? And I said, I have no idea how to price this. So let's put a slider between $2 to $30. Let people pull it wherever they want and then click on pay and just pay for the product. You know, it's probably a bad idea, but they felt that it was an interesting pricing strategy. So he posted it on Twitter saying that, hey, startup is trying out a new pricing strategy here, or pricing, you know, analysis or experiment here. Ryan Hoover, who was the co-creator of Product Hunt, saw that tweet. He came to the website and he saw that the product was interesting. So he went back to Dave on Twitter and said that, hey, Dave, the product is also interesting. Why don't you post it on Product Hunt? We didn't know any of this, and Dave posted it on Product Hunt and we got launched. So that's how we got accidentally launched. But in the next 30, 36 hours, we onboarded 2,000 people came to the website. We kind of manually using chat onboarded 800 of them. And out of those 800, there were like a few PR people, like, you know, writers. They wrote about the product in CNET, GigaOM, Lifehacker, Lifehacker Russia. And kind of in the next 2-3 weeks, we went up from 800 users to 4,000 users. So to answer specifically to your point, right, when that organic pull happens from the market, which never happened with our previous products, this was the time we were like, okay, we are probably onto something here.
So I know that obviously to support that growth, you know, you guys looked as well at raising money. And I know that the first time, you know, the first rodeo was not a walk full of roses. So what happened during the fundraising efforts here?
Yeah. So 2.5 years we were bootstrapped, and then we decided, okay, you know, it's time, let's go out and try something. I made a bunch of mistakes. The first mistake that I did was I started raising in October timeframe, October-November timeframe, which is probably not the best time to start raising because of the vacation, December, et cetera, come through. I got two investors to, I was planning to raise $400,000. I got two investors to commit 150 and 150 each. And I was like, okay, I am at 300K. Let me find a few more value-added angels and I'll close the round. But the mistake that I did was I didn't make them sign a safe or a convertible note. And December went through, January came, and they were both like, oh, we didn't commit. We were just seeing that we are interested. So my 300K soft commit went to zero. But even before that, I had to go through 65 people. 65 people said no to me. You know, they would take a call. They'll be like, yeah, this is interesting. Let's do another call. So I went through like 65 meetings and all 65 were no. The 66th person said yes. And then this commit went back to zero. And then I had to restart. And we ended up raising $380,000. And that was enough for us at that time. So the first rodeo was certainly not a cakewalk, but learned quite a bit.
What is the biggest lesson, your biggest takeaway, you know, from that, besides, you know, timing and seasonality and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, simple things like when somebody is committing, make them commit on a piece of paper, right? You should know the instrument that you are looking at. And then once you have somebody saying, yes, I am interested, I am hard committing some number, use your instrument. Could be safe, could be a convertible note, whatever you are using. Just make sure that you get it on a piece of paper. The second thing is, if you are doing your fundraise, do it in a strategical way where you have everybody coming at pretty much the same timeline. You shouldn't be serializing the conversations, right? You should be like, okay, let me talk to person one, then person two, then person three. It should be more like I'm bringing everybody to the table almost at the same timelines. The more people that there are on the table, the better deal I will get. You know, the third important thing, which probably is over a period of time, I learned this. It's very important for entrepreneurs to understand the math that investors are doing in their head, the pattern matching that investors are doing in their head, and where they are coming from. If you can get into their shoes, then your fundraising process is way easier. But most of the entrepreneurs don't know that. And again, first-time entrepreneur, as an entrepreneur, I also made that mistake. If you get a chance to sit down with an experienced deal maker, then ask them, hey, what does that rationale look like? What does that thesis look like? Why do people care about ownership percentage? Things like that. So those are some of the learnings.
So at what point does a full contact come knocking?
Yeah, so we were in the process of building out the company. We started as four people, grew to 7, 12, 32, 52, 72. So the company was kind of scaling pretty well. We became profitable. I think we were about 39 people when we became profitable. And then we were like, yeah, we have money. We will grow. So we will kind of started burning a little bit more. I got a fully committed pre-Series A term sheet for the company. At that time, Full Contact, who was an existing strategic partner who was buying data from us, they were like, hey, we want to buy out the company because the combined entity has a lot of value. And back in the day, Full Contact was doing extremely good. They had raised, at that time, I think they had raised about $30 million or something so far. And they were just going to close their Series C for about $25 million. Again, Series C in 2016, $25 million is pretty good. So they had a lot of traction behind and they were doubling revenue almost on a yearly basis. So it totally made sense to sell the company. And this happened in 2016. So we ran that company for 4.5 years. And while I sold the company, I later realized that that was the first product exit in the history of my state. It had never happened before. So you can imagine the nascency of the ecosystem. But it became kind of like a milestone event in the state. It was not a big outcome. It was single digit million. It's a legally undisclosed thing. So I cannot tell the numbers, honestly. But yeah, the outcome kind of changed our lives, the founders, but also the larger ecosystem.
That's amazing. So then obviously in this case, you guys then did the transition, the vesting and resting in Full Contact for a little over a year. And then eventually the idea of basically incent AI, you know, comes also to you. Once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. So tell us about how, you know, did you think about this next, you know, chapter, you know, and why you thought it would make sense to go at it again with incent.ai?
Between Full Contact and Incent, there is 9 months where I was actually consulting. I consulted for a bunch of sales tech companies, smart tech companies, data tech companies. Wanted to kind of learn the trick of the trade of consulting, wanted to do better in sales. So did that. And during that journey is when I realized the real-time conversations in B2B was becoming more and more apparent to me. And I was like, there is certainly a better way to do real-time conversations. That's where Incent, the name comes from intent and consent of the buyer. So the whole idea was a buyer wants to get information from a B2B company. It is very difficult today. They don't want to submit a form and then wait for, you know, 5 days to get information. So we wanted to build a B2B account-based buyer-centric conversational experience for companies. That's what we did. And there was Drift.com. They had a conversational platform which was more chatbot oriented back in the day. And we were there, and there's another company which is still around doing good, qualified.com. So three of us were kind of in that realm of account-based marketing, advanced B2B chat application. That's how Incent came together, end of 2018.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then tell us about the monetization strategy here. What was the business model? How did you guys end up making money here with Incent.ai?
It was a B2B SaaS model. So it was based on, there was a platform pricing for the underlying conversational platform, which included the integrations, setting up of the process, onboarding, and all of that. And then there was a per seat pricing. I think there was 10 seats that were baked into the basic platform fee. And then if you wanted to have more seats, then you would obviously pay more money. It was true SaaS simple model. There was no pro services or things like that.
Now, this time around, you guys were quite successful in raising money. You know, if you were to compare with the first rodeo, you raised a little over $4 million, you know, and that was ultimately the same thing. You know, you have another player, ZoomInfo, coming knocking here. Obviously, you at this point, you are very familiar with the acquisition process. So how did you go about things differently, you know, this time around?
Yeah. So the second company, we actually didn't raise 4 million. We in total raised 2.7 million. But you're right that the fundraising process was way more easier. The first round, when I said that I'm starting the company, my previous investors who all made good outcome with my first company, they all wrote a check almost immediately. I told them I don't even know what I'm doing, but they were still happy about it. We put a cap on a safe, and then they wrote, like, I think it was a 4 million cap back in the day. They just wrote a check and like, here you go with $300,000. And then we also went through Techstars. They put in an additional 120K. So in total, we started the company with 420K. Then coming out of Techstars, there was $380,000 that organically came through mentors inside Techstars. We didn't try to raise. We had that. And then we did a seed round led by Emergent Ventures. That was 1.9 million. So that was the total fundraising at the company. It was way easier to raise the second time around. The acquisition, again, wasn't planned. The first time also, it wasn't planned. Second time also, I was never planning to sell. I was just continuously focused on the business and how to grow the business. I had almost a commitment to my Series A. I had advanced discussions with a Series A, a really good investor here in the Bay Area. And I was supposed to come to the Bay Area to meet the investor. But at that time, Henry Schuck, the CEO of ZoomInfo, who I had known for some time, I have this habit, it's probably interesting to the listeners how the acquisition inbound came. I sent an email. I have this habit of when an industry thing is happening, which I feel is relevant, let's say Alejandro, for you, something is very relevant for you, I'll drop a quick 2-3 sentence to you saying, hey, did you see this news? It's very interesting for you, right? Or I believe it is interesting for you. So I sent such an email to Henry when I saw some industry news, which I felt was relevant to ZoomInfo as a company. He responded back saying, "Hey, Arjun, that is interesting, but what you're doing is more interesting. Let's catch up." So that is what got the first conversation actually going. And I had received other acquisition offers, but I didn't entertain any of them. But Henry was different. ZoomInfo was different. So I took the call. He was very explicit that, hey, you know, this is a space that I want to do an M&A. And then it went cold for a little bit. We talked October 2020, I believe. It went cold for a little bit of time. And I didn't push because I wasn't trying to sell. Then in February, when my Series A was coming together, again, interestingly, I was sitting at my desk doing the work. I got a notification from my product saying, someone from ZoomInfo is on your website. And I said, hey, great to have you from ZoomInfo. And well, hey, Arjun, this is Henry Shuck from ZoomInfo. The product is very interesting. We should catch up. That restarted the conversation. At that time, it went super fast. In about 2 months, 3 months down, the whole thing was done. That's how the second acquisition kind of came about.
That's amazing. So what have you learned about acquisitions? What's your biggest take? You know, like for the people that are listening that maybe are thinking about, you know, doing M&A and getting a bigger player to acquire them. I mean, what do you have to tell them?
Yeah, a few things. First of all, don't build a company to exit. It is fine to have exit as one of your options, but build the company as if you want to build for long term. I always believe that the best deals come to you, whether it is from investors, whether it is from acquirers, they come to you when you build a solid business. So I would put all the focus on building a strong business and funding coming through or acquisitions coming through. In all of these cases, I have never ran a process. I've never ran a process for fundraising. I have never ran a process for acquisition. It always come organically to me. That has been my experience. Focus on the business, good things will happen. The second experience is if you are going through the acquisition process, make sure that you get the right kind of support, whether it is legal side, tax side. You need to make sure that you have the right support if you're going through that process. First time, I made a lot of mistakes because it was happening for the first time. I didn't have the right legal support. I didn't have the right tax support. I probably paid about, I don't know, $300,000 in taxes to the government, which we could have easily saved if I had a good tax person assisting us, right? So second time around, I got the best legal support, best tax support, and that turned out to be a really good decision. The third and the biggest learning from me after acquisition is once you sell a company, it is not your company. Founders have a difficult time getting this internalized. I also went through this mistake where once I sold my company to Full Contact, I had an emotional attachment to the company still. That is not the right way to do it. Once you sell the company, it is not your company. You should kind of emotionally and mentally move on from that and start looking at things objectively. So these are probably the three big ones that I can think of.
So then obviously, you know, once this acquisition happened again, you know, you stayed with ZoomInfo a little bit and then, you know, pretty much the same thing, you know, Docket. Eh? So Docket, obviously third time around, you know, I'm sure that you thought about, you know, things differently and very much in depth, you know, before you actually pulled the trigger, you know, so what do you think, you know, like made it so, I don't know, so appealing to you to go at it, you know, on this third chapter?
Yeah. My time at ZoomInfo was very fruitful for me. I learned a ton. And in my perspective, even for the company, it was very fruitful. Whatever I could do for the company, including launching a new product, doing things with the data side at ZoomInfo. But at the same time, you know, and you mentioned this, Alejandro, once an entrepreneur, he or she, they always have this feeling of, hey, I want to go out and do this again. And I still have the energy, right? I'm 35 now. I still have the energy to build a company. And this is probably the time I am the best networked. I have the most amount of energy. And with my second outcome, a second exit that happened, financially, I'm taken care. I don't have to work per se. But that all gives me a lot of cushion to kind of go out and swing for the fences, right? So that's what Docket is all about. And AI was happening so thick and fast in the past couple of years. This is probably the biggest paradigm shift that we will experience in our lifetime. I mean, we had a couple, right? I was studying when SaaS was happening, but I was around when mobile was happening. I was kind of there when social was happening, but I was still very young to kind of really get used to or make sense out of those trends. But AI is happening when I have the energy, I have the network, And I believe it is the biggest paradigm shift that will happen in my lifetime. So it was too good of an option or too good of an opportunity to pass. And on top of all this, I found a problem statement that resonates with me that I understand deeply, and I wanted to solve that. And that's where Docket comes in.
And how are you guys making money at Docket?
Same thing. It's a SaaS product. It's a platform-based pricing. We have a platform price and a per-seat price. Hopefully, over a period of time, the AI is going to enable us to evolve our pricing to something more like an outcome-based pricing or something like that. But today, it is true SaaS platform plus seat model.
So then in this regard, you know, you guys also went about it differently too on raising money, because you've raised quite a bit more than on the last rodeos, and also from like super heavy weights. So I'm sure that now, you know, having had two exits under your belt, it was easy stuff, raising money, you know. So how did you go about doing it, and why did you take the money from the people you did?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, it was easier this time than the last time. What my experience is, every time it gets easier up to a point. My second company, it was easy to raise my first couple of rounds. This time also the first couple of rounds, and I'm sure that as the company progresses, it will get slightly tougher. When I started the company, the initial idea was, I don't have to raise. I'm going to put 400, 500K and then run the company for a month, and then we'll see. But when I was catching up with my previous investors, all of them wanted to kind of chip back in. And 4 days after the incorporation, I was sitting on roughly $3 million, $3.5 million in soft commits. They were like, yes, we want to invest this money. And I was like, okay, there is good interest here. So let me actually go ahead and do a proper raise here. At that time, Foundation Capital, Ashok Garg and Jaya Gupta, they reached out to me out of the blue, actually. I took a call. Ashu and I hit it off very quickly on a call. So the first call was supposed to be 30 minutes. We spoke for 55. And then in 20 days, from nothing to the deal done in 20 days, happened with Foundation. So Foundation led the round for the total round was $5.3 million. Founders co-op in Seattle, Henry Shuck, ZoomInfo, the CEO, Jeff Lunsford, CEO of Telium, Anup Haradwaj, Lassin, president, Viral, CTO of Sixth Sense, a bunch of really amazing angels came together to do the 5.3. Then we found a few pilots, design partners, started to build out the product, delivered the product. We started generating early revenues. Mayfield and I have had a pretty long relationship. I've known Rajiv Batra from Mayfield for a long time, Naveen for a long time. That conversation kind of very quickly, I was catching up with Naveen, and then that conversation very quickly evolved into a Series A conversation. And then I think they moved fast. Patrick is my partner at Mayfield. Patrick was amazing. He moved so fast in about 3 to 4 weeks' time, did all the due diligence and work on their side. And then, you know, Series A happened. We raised $15 million led by Mayfield, and Foundation joined in.
So obviously, vision is a really big deal here. And it's something that I'm sure those guys were banking on, those guys and gals. So I guess a question for you, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Docket is fully realized, what does that world look like?
The future with Docket fully established would mean that Docket has become an AI sales engineer in the organizations, where it is assisting the existing sales engineers and existing account executives to a point where the go-to-market efficiency in those companies is so good. Docket is joining the calls, answering the questions, taking the demos, being a full teammate to the companies, and making sure that the B2B companies are operating at super high efficiency. That's what the goal would look like in terms of a vertically fully integrated AI sales engineer.
So then here we're talking about the future. I want to talk about the past, but with a lens of reflection. So let's say I was to take you back in time. You know, maybe I take you back in time to that moment where you were, you know, now thinking about going at it on your own, you know, building your own business, you know, let's say maybe 2012. And let's say you have the opportunity of having a chat with that younger Arjun and giving that younger Arjun one piece of advice for launching a business. What would that be, and why, given what you know now?
My first advice would be learn validation and validate everything that you want to do really, really deeply. The first four products that I failed, the commonality was I did not do proper customer market validation before I built the product. So today, even before writing the first line of code, I will do a bunch of validation with the right people. So like validation, do validate everything that you are looking to do. So that would be the first advice that I would give. The second advice is probably everybody who you meet, they are smart. Take feedback from them, but don't think that everybody you meet know more than you, which might be true for a very small percentage of the people, but for most people, especially in your business, right? I'm not talking everything. I'm talking about your business. You are thinking about it 24/7 all the time. So about that, there's a significant chance that you have a view that is probably right than most of the people that you meet. So you hear everybody's input, take that as your input as a founder to process through. Don't make others take decisions for you. So I thought, yeah, I could have done better, you know, in the second point that I just. So these are probably the two.
I love it. So Arjun, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
LinkedIn is probably the best. Just search for Arjun Pillai and you should be able to find me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter, but LinkedIn is probably the best place. And you can also learn more about Docket at docketai.com or just search for Docket AI on Google. So those would be the two places where you can reach me, learn more.
Amazing. Well, hey, Arjun, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us today.
Likewise, I had a blast. Thanks a lot for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.